Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to Meet the Author on Blog Talk Radio. My name is Denny Griffin, and for the next half hour, I'll be your host, talking to today's guest, who is Mike Hazard, and he's the author of the book, The Sea's Fury, which was published in January 2007. Mike grew up in the Pacific Northwest, where he enlisted in the U.S. Coast Guard in 1970. For the next 6 years, he lived a childhood dream, responding to dozens of search and rescue calls from boaters on the Straits of Juan de Fuca and points south of Tatoosh Island. His assignments took him to Biorka Island, 15 miles west of Sitka, Alaska, for 12 months, and Nia Bay, Washington, and Sandpoint Naval Air Station in Seattle, Washington. Mike, good morning and welcome to Meet the Author.
Good morning, Denny.
I'm going to, just before we get to you telling us about your book, anybody who would like to call in with a question or comment for Mike can reach us at 646-478-0982, 646-478-0982. And I also have a chat room. If you're on my Blog Talk Radio website, you can enter the chat room and text a question or comment to us that way. And in a few minutes, I'm going to ask Mike to give out his contact information. So if you have a paper and pencil handy, when we get to that, you can make a note of how to get a hold of Mike. Mike, can you tell us a little bit about your book, The Sea's Fury, and what it's all about?
Well, The Sea's Fury is a book about a young man entering the Coast Guard, and it's a story, a short period of his life in that adventure, and based on my experience in the Coast Guard, this certainly wasn't an autobiography by any means, but I did use the experience that I had in the Coast Guard. I was in from 70 to 76. I was a machinery technician, second class, and so I worked on the engines and kept the boat running. But, we made a lot of boat calls, and so I used this experience to create this novel. It is a novel. And it's just basically an account of this young man's life at this point in his Coast Guard career, where he starts in boot camp and, goes to a couple schools, and then he gets out in the real world of Coast Guard rescue and goes through several different rescues that have different degrees of excitement, I guess you could say, or adventure. But anyway, I tried to keep it as adventuresome and exciting as I could the entire book.
So although this is a fiction, the incidents and the rescue operations that you depict in the book are based on actual things and methods and techniques that would have been used.
Oh, absolutely. And they relate to the actual events in varying degrees. Okay, in other words, some of the points in Coast Guard history or my experience I used either in full or in a tiny portion of the inspiration for that particular part of the story. There are a lot of books written about the Coast Guard, and they're all great books. I think I probably read 7 or 8 books, maybe a little more, that weren't all Coast Guard history, but certainly books about the story itself to, come up with as accurate account as I could when I was writing the story. But the events themselves do have some basis of fact. And in fact, my editor was kind of a stickler on that. When I got a little bit too carried away with some of the events that I was trying to portray in the books, she said, "Well, are you sure about that?" so she wanted me to go back and revisit a couple of them, and I did, and I appreciate her doing that because I felt that the accuracy in the story led credence to the story, and so she was a real drill instructor in that regard. So.
And I think it sounds like you would probably agree that research and coming up with as accurate a story as possible is certainly an asset that speaks well for you and the book.
Well, it certainly was part of it, Denny. And there were several avenues that I pursued in that research. Like I say, I'm, read several books about, first of all, about Coast Guard history, and then there were several different aspects of the story that I had to research because I knew nothing about them, you know, but I wanted them to be part of the story. So, yeah, it involved newspaper research through newspaper accounts. There was, in addition to the books, there was, you know, internet research. I spent hours researching on the internet, which is a great resource. It was a great tool for that type of thing. I talked to people, established, you know, a relationship with people that had the information that I needed, and tried to get as much information out of them as I could, and that was a big resource.
How much time did it take you from the time you started the manuscript until the book was actually available? How long a time frame are we talking?
Well, first word to publish book was about 3 years, but to break that down just a little bit, the story you know, really came into being about, well, the inspiration happened about October of 2003, okay, 2003. And since I was in college at the time, I didn't really have time to start, you know, putting word to paper or even sitting at a typewriter or a computer to start generating the manuscript. So I really didn't start the manuscript until about December of 2003. And at that point, it was a matter of a lot of words on legal pad, simply because I was, like I say, I was in school, and so I didn't have time to, you know, dedicate a lot of time to the manuscript. But I wanted to capture the thoughts that were coming into play, and there was a bunch of them at the beginning, and of course over the course of writing the manuscript. But so from December of 2003 to June of 2005, let's say, that was when that's what it took to get the manuscript to the first edition, as it were. And it was in June of 2005 that I sent it to the first editor. And believe it or not, from June of 2005 to January of 2007, it was in the editing process in one form or another. And I guess I could explain that a little bit. In other words, when I sent it to my editor the first time, there was about 79,000 words. And when she sent it back, much to my demise, she had deleted about 11,000 of those words.
Oh, wow.
It was quite a shock, didn't it? I was a little crushed at that point.
I can imagine.
So, but anyway, you know, I kept looking through the manuscript. I looked at what she'd done, and I said, well, yeah, you're right there, and you got that right. And so, okay, well, yeah, I'll fix that. And so she left me notes in the margin and told me that, you know, hey, this is a great story and all this, but you don't need this here, but you do need something else here, there, you know, that kind of thing. So she gave me a lot of assignments even while she was editing the book and said, Mike, write up this and, you know, send this to me because you need to put this in the story. And so I had all these assignments while we were going through the editing process. And so even though she had deleted a lot of the words, you know, that like I call them highly prized words, even though she deleted a lot of those, she had given me assignments that recreated those and replaced those words. So I was grateful for that. But even having gotten the manuscript edited back, it was still kind of a shock. Because by that time, you know, being an author yourself, Denny, that it is a long process, and it's when you get to the end and you just hope it would finish soon, you know.
Yeah.
But anyway, there was a lot more work to do after the editing process. So
after you reviewed what she had done and read her notes, generally speaking, you were satisfied she'd done the right thing?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, she was a great editor. I believe she was a publisher before, you know, before being an editor, and so she really knew what she was doing. The thing that really helped me with her, or the thing that she did for me, the greatest thing that she did for me was sort of rearrange the book. You know, she would take something from the back of the book and put it in the front, and then she'd put something in the front of the book and say, well, it needs to go to the rear of the story. So, you know, she did all of that. Plus, like I say, she gave me assignments. And if I could, you know, if I could indulge you in what one of those assignments were, the hardest thing for me in the book, because it's a story about a rescue swimmer in the Coast Guard, even though I was definitely not a rescue swimmer. But one of the hardest things for me to write in the book was the chapter about the rescue swimmer school. And she said, that is something you have to have. When I sent my initial manuscript through, I was going to try and avoid that part of the book because I really didn't know anything about that. You know, not being a rescue swimmer myself, I really lacked a lot of information on that. But that was something she wasn't going to let slide. And, you know, I'm grateful that she didn't now because I did go back and did a lot of research. The first thing I did is I downloaded the Rescue Swimmer Manual off the Internet, and I was fortunate enough to find that. So I got a few facts and information about it, but that really wasn't enough to, you know, write the whole chapter. So I knew I really needed to find somebody. This was the key for me, was to find somebody that had gone through Rescue Swimmer School so they could give me their own personal perspective of what it was like to do that. And for any author, I mean, this is something you have to do. It's a fact of reality because it was such an integral part of the story. So I was able to find somebody who, you know, had been through rescue swimmer school, and he was very cooperative, and we actually were able to exchange and help each other because he lived in Alaska at the time, and when I was stationed there in Alaska, which a good part of the story takes place there, he wanted to know about the island where I was stationed at because he goes out there on a regular basis, and he wanted to know what was there several years ago. So I was able to send him a lot of pictures and information about the island, and then he helped me write that portion of the book. So it was a good exchange of information.
Mutually beneficial.
It was, yeah, yeah.
let me ask you, Mike, and for those of us not familiar with the Coast Guard operations, what type of boats are involved? I mean, size-wise and so forth, would be involved in your rescue stories?
Yeah. Well, in this book itself, there are really two sizes. The primary workhorse for the Coast Guard at the time that I was in was the 44-footer. There were still a few 40-footers at that time, which we did have one where I was stationed. But the primary workhorse was the 44, and also there were 52s. Just to start from the very bottom, I believe there used to be a 22-footer. There was a 30-footer, and then they went to the 40, and then the 44, the 50, and then the 52. So today, the 44 is no longer used by the Coast Guard, unless they're in some in a remote location that I don't know about, but the primary workhorse of the Coast Guard today is the 41-footer and the 47-footer. So they're all designed for rough weather. They're designed for long-distance travel. They're designed for carrying a lot of people. So those are all the things that the Coast Guard has, you know, brought into their design of those vessels.
We go back to editing for just a minute.
Sure.
Editing obviously is a very important part of manuscript preparation.
Mm-hmm.
Some people have different ideas on editing. For example, and I did this years ago with my first manuscript, I tried strictly self-editing. I shouldn't say self, but I didn't hire an editor. What I did was I read and reread and re-reread the manuscript time after time after time. I had my wife read it and multiple times, and I had a friend read it, and I had some other people read specific sections or chapters that I was concerned about, but I never went to a professional editor with it. Knowing what I know now, I wish I had done that, and I think based on what you're telling me, and what your editor did, and obviously rearranged and drastically reduced the size of the manuscript. And this, I assume, was a paid editor that you had to pay her for the service?
Yes, it was, yeah.
And I think now what you told me confirms my feeling that I made an error when I tried to take the cheap way out. And when I look back at that book now, it's still available. It's a self-published book through Author House, and it's still available. And when I read it from time to time, I still think, did I write that? You know, why didn't I do something this way? Why didn't I do it that way? Now, I've learned that through experience over the years. I've learned quite a bit. But certainly had I went to a paid editor with a manuscript to begin with, a lot of the things now that I see that make me cringe would not have been there, I'm sure. What do you think?
Well, writing your first book is definitely a learning process, Denny, and I will be the first to admit that if there were any mistakes to be made in writing your first writing a book, I made every single one of them. So I can admit that with full honesty that there were a lot of mistakes made. As far as the editing process itself, it is a, I would say it is a multifaceted process. And what I mean by that, there were probably at least five editors, including myself, involved in my writing of the book. So after I had the first part of my manuscript, I wrote it in two sections. I wrote the second half first and the first half second, which, you know, that doesn't make a lot of sense, but that's the way it happened. And I certainly don't recommend that to anybody who's a aspiring author, because what I'll do, and I've already done this in a future book, is outline from beginning to end much more thoroughly than what I did on this one. Like I say, this was a very spontaneous thing that happened, you know, writing this book. It wasn't something I planned over a long period of time. But anyway, on the editing portion of it, when I had the first half of the manuscript written, I sent it to my niece who's got a master's in English, and I felt that, you know, she would be a good expert on, first of all, the punctuation and the spelling and this kind of stuff, and maybe she could throw in a few ideas about where to put this and where to put that, and that was successful. She did a great job. It came back with a lot of red ink on it, which is what I fully expected. And you know, she told me a couple of things that might help the, you know, end the chapter here and start it with the next chapter or something like that. And they were all good hints. And so that got me to the first part of the editing process. Then I took a creative writing class and talked to my teacher there, and he said, well, you've got a great start here, but this is only half a book, and so you really need to go back and write some more and tie this book all together. So it basically didn't start completely over, but I certainly had to write a lot of reconfiguring to do. So that got me to where the manuscript was at the, you know, the 79,000 words point, and much, much bigger at that point. So I sent it off to several publishers because, you know, that's what they told me in the creative writing class. You've got to get it out there, and the best way to do that is to go to a publication called Writer's Market, which I found a copy of at the library and then found a used copy online and bought the book myself. Just went page to page and found out where I could submit my copy. And where this is going with the editing is that they quickly wrote back and said, we like your story and all that, it's a great story, but yeah, we're not quite interested.
Right.
So I realized at that point too that it did have some editing problems, and I decided at that point that I was gonna find somebody who could really help me.
Mike,
actually,
can I interrupt her for just a second? We've got a caller on the line. Let's take the call and then we'll pick up where we're leaving off here.
Sure,
okay?
You bet. Okay, editing.
Hi, caller.
Hi.
Do you have a question or comment for my guest?
I do. Mike, this is Becky from Washington.
Hey, Becky.
And I wanted you to know that I enjoyed your book.
Well, great.
But I want to know if you have any advice for young, struggling writers out there. It sounds like you have to endure a lot of rejections. And how do you cope with that, and how did you keep going?
Well, Becky, you've hit the nail on the head there with the word rejection, because that is something that a young author does have to deal with. And so I guess where we would start with that is to have a great inspiration. The reason I say that is if you have a great inspiration, that will carry you from the beginning of the book, you know, from the first page of the book to the end. And that's the way it was with me. The inspiration for my book was somebody that I'd gone to school with, and she was a terrific individual that had endured a lot in her life. And, you know, because of what she had endured, so to speak, it really inspired me to, well, I wanted to sort of write a legacy, as it were. I wanted to write a story that would reflect her perseverance because of the things that she'd done in life, and also because of the help that she'd given me, because, you know, she was very inspirational, not only helping me write the book, but getting me through college. So anyway, so I'm saying have a great inspiration. That's the first thing. And then make a commitment to start what you finish. And in that process of starting what you finish, you are going to face the rejection of that editor, and, you know, there's going to be distractions along the way.
How do you not take it personally, Mike?
And I guess my answer to that would be is just think about it for a while and think about what the rejection says, and be open to how it would improve, how it improve the work. And once you can see that, then you're ready to move ahead, and you can say, yep, yeah, she was right. And if I do this and this and this, that's going to get me through this, and it will be a better work after I get through it. So just I guess the advice is to be prepared for that, but to be able to stay focused and, you know, have that goal and never lose sight of that goal of writing that book. Because, first of all, you've got that inspiration and you've got that purpose, and just make that your leader, as it were, and just continue to plug on through it. So.
Well, thank you, Mike. Again, I enjoyed the book. And do you plan a sequel?
Yes, I do. For you that have read the book, the main characters need to get to know each other a little better.
Yes,
so,
they do.
So that's going to be part of the next book, and I can't tell you when that's going to come out, because unfortunately I have a job that gets in the way every day. But but there are certainly plans for that, and I've been, you know, jotting down some notes and information, and hope to have that together not too far into the future. So.
Well, I'm looking forward to the new book.
Well, I'll make sure you hear about it then. And thanks.
Nice
for
talking to you, Mike.
Okay, you betcha, Becky.
Bye.
Thanks for the call, Becky. Okay, very interesting about having to have a tough skin and not take these things personally, because you do, you're going to have a short writing career, I'm afraid.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Dennis. You have to be committed, and like I say, when we're going to talk a little more about that editing, but like I say, when she cut out those 11,000 words from the manuscript, man, I didn't really know what to do, but, like I say, after I got in there and started reading it, I realized, man, this is a much better manuscript than what I sent her, and so built from there.
Mike, now I think when we paused to answer Becky's call, we were just about to the point where you had decided that you needed some professional editing done on the manuscript. Now, how did you happen to locate the editor that you ended up retaining?
Okay. Well, the first thing I did was, like I do in a lot of cases, is do an internet search, and I was able to find basically a clearinghouse, as it were, for editors. And so I'd say there was probably 8 or 9, maybe more, editors that I kind of narrowed down to 3. And so I wrote to each one of those 3, and then they wrote back to me in turn. And I evaluated what they said. I evaluated what they could do for me. And I evaluated how much they're going to cost. And from that point, I made a determination. And I'll have to tell you, Dennis, I didn't go with the cheapest editor. Because this is, you know, all goes back to the commitment to finish the work. And then when you finish the work, you want it to be the best that you can possibly be. And so I did make the choice with actually the most expensive editor there was. And I have to say that, you know, I was more than satisfied. I will also say that the editing process didn't stop there. And to an aspiring author, it is an expense that you're going to have to put out, but you can't put all your eggs in that one basket. In other words, what I mean by that is you can't totally rely on this on this editor for everything. I mean, in my situation, what I mean by that is, because I, when I sent her the second manuscript, because they always give you two, you know, they'll do a first edit and they'll do a second edit, which is, okay. When I'd sent her the second one, I'd basically sent her another book. You know, she wrote back and said, well, Mike, you've given me a whole new book here, because I did. I replaced that 11,000 plus gave her another 10 or 15,000 words. So, you know, she said, well, we'll do what we can do with this and we'll go from there. So basically, when her second manuscript came back that she'd edited for me, I realized that, you know, I still need to do a little work on it. And so I did find another local editor that was very good, didn't cost half as much money. And you know, that really wasn't an issue at that point. I just wanted to finish my book.
Yeah.
And so even when I got done with that editor, then I became the editor. And I have to say that I probably read the manuscript at least 12 times, maybe more, you know, from the beginning to the end. And Dennis, I was so tired of reading that manuscript, I didn't want to read it anymore. But to self-edit, a little tip on self-editing, if you break out the ruler or the straight edge and just go sentence by sentence, word by word in each sentence, you know, I ended up doing that ultimately, and that's what you really have to do. So.
Mike, I don't know where the time went to. We're down to about 3 or 4 minutes here, so very, very quickly, let's spend a couple of minutes now, and after the manuscript was done and you went through the editing process, what did you do in the way of finding a publisher?
Well, again, initially, I had sent it out to the traditional publishers. Like, I didn't send it to Simon & Schuster, but I'll use that as an example. You know, just traditional line publishers, and then I went to some self-publishers, some people that do print-on-demand type of publishing, and several. The research I did on that is I went to a website that listed the top self-publishing companies, you know, and then I contacted them. So I talked to three of those, and you know, I said, okay, tell me what this is going to cost me first of all, and then what am I going to get at the end? And I was not satisfied with any of those. And again, I went to another internet search, and I found a local publisher. And we worked together on it. She had a reasonable price. She did a good job for me. And basically what she did is she created a galley proof for me. And, I mean, that was part of the contract. And since then, I've come up with my own printer. So that printer now holds the galley proof, and I just need to call him up and say, look, I need 100 copies, or I need 200 copies, or whatever I need. And then I'll either have him ship them to me, or I'll go pick them up myself.
So how you ended up here is you're satisfied with that? It's a good working relationship?
Oh, absolutely. And the reason I'm satisfied is because as an author, after you make all these expenditures in writing the book, and you definitely have a time investment here, you want the cost benefit to be in your favor from the outset when you start selling your book. And
sure.
So that was the way I found to do that, was to this method that I just described to you, that was the best method possible to do that. And I have been satisfied in the results.
Mike, I almost forgot here. Can you give out your contact information? We're down to our last minute or so. I want to make sure we get that in.
Sure. And that's, you can buy my book at Spinnaker Press, and that's Spinnaker Press with two N's, spinnakerpress.com. Email address, should I give out the email address? Or?
Sure, if you're willing to take your questions or comments
sure.
from listeners. Yeah, go ahead, right ahead.
Okay, it's M Hazard, and that's Hazard, 36, at Cox, C-O-X, .net. M Hazard, 36, at Cox.net. And you can also pick that up at my website at www.spinnakerpress.com.
Okay, we're running out of time here. I don't want to start marketing because we couldn't do it justice in 30 seconds.
Sure,
what I'd like to do, you already said that you have a sequel in the works. What I think I'd like to do, if it's okay with you, Mike, when that sequel comes out, is have you back on, and we'll discuss the sequel, and then we'll get into some things we didn't get a chance to cover today, such as marketing. Is that okay?
Okay. Yeah, that sounds great, Dennis.
Okay, well, listen, thanks a million for being on and
well, thank you,
sharing your experiences with us. and we'll have you back on in the future as soon as that next book is ready.
All right. Well, that sounds great, Denny. Thank you very much for having me on.
Thanks, Mike. Have a great day.
Okay, you too. Bye.
And thanks a million to Mike, and thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.